Reverend Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. I'm happy today. I'm happy today. I had a tremendous week. I tell you, it was truly exciting. I got a chance to go deal with these county commissioners once again. And also, here's the good news. We have two attorneys willing to take Angela Collins' case. Matter of fact, they're coming out of the woodwork now. They're all trying to get there. They take that case to go against Whirlpool. Oh, I tell you, we've been doing some tremendous things. We've just been taking our time, just getting this thing right and letting people know that, you know, Whirlpool, you're going down. You're going down, Whirlpool. I want people to know that they're going down and we're going to do it together. Every single person that's listening today, we want you to continue to boycott all their products. That is crucial for us to come up with a victory here. But I tell you, I've been doing some tremendous things. And before I bring on my two co-hosts, I want to tell you one of the things that we did. This week, we went over to the county board commissioner meeting. And we had to talk about why African Americans, black people, was given so much time. We had one case where a young man was given 15 years for some ecstasy pill, where you normally would get probation or something like that, a person who never had a felony in his life. Then he was also sentenced for 45 years, 45 and 15. The same case, there was a white person who had committed 6 felonies, 5 misdemeanors, and was given 3 to 5 years in prison. And he did some work. He even shot this person. So we know there was a problem there. But the issue that we went over there to talk about the court-appointed attorneys. And I tell you, I'm going to read you what we gave to every commissioner and every judge. It said the defense service in Barron County has the following indigent defense deficiencies: no written client eligibility standards, no merit-based for attorney hiring and retention program, no written performance standards or system of supervisor or supervision or monitoring of any of the court-appointed attorneys. No guidelines on how to identify a conflict of interest. No work standard, that they can work any way they want to. No adequate attorney training. No independence from the judiciary or prosecutorial function. Judges, prosecutors, indigent defense all work together against the defendant. The inability of the indigent defense counsel to defend the case against their client to the fullest has credible, meaningful adversary effect, which causes the defendant to suffer numerous harm, including but not limited to wrongful denial of representation, wrongful conviction of crimes, unnecessary or prolonged pretrial detention, guilty plea to inappropriate charges, and denial of the right to a trial when the merit of the defense is not available. In other words, they don't defend you. Harsher sentences than the facts of the case warrant, few alternatives to incarceration. We want the people in Barron County to provide indigent defense program and representation consistent with the requirements of not only of the United States, but also of this county. So those are some of the things that we did this week. We was on top of what we're trying to do. We're trying to let them know that we're not going to take this mess anymore. And every single Thursday, I'm over at the county commissioner meeting talking to these folks. But they see, you're supposed to be afraid of them because they go around talking about how much power they have, all the things they can do. We control this area. We control these things. So that's really what it adds up to. So we're just taking it one step at a time, just trying to be what we are, just trying to do the things that need to be done and to bring folks in and make sure that they understand. But right now, let me bring in my brother, my man, my favorite man, a former Black Panther Party member, one of the greatest individuals that I know, a person who I love dearly, Larry Pinckney. Talk to me, Larry.
Hi, brother.
How you doing today?
Brother. I feel great in fighting spirit and all the wonderful things that you have said about me. You know, I have to say right back at you. I love you.
Right, I like to hear you say that. Right back at you, brother. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Right back at you, brother. I know where you're going with that. Right back at you, brother. So we know how that feels, but I tell you, I woke myself so hard this weekend. I thought I was coming down with the Hong Kong flu or something. I'm not claiming it. Believe me, I'm not. But it was like I had to go to church. I had to go to Jackson yesterday. We had a big meeting up there. And, I'm always traveling all over the state. And every single day, people calling all day long. They always want something. So my job, I'm not comfortable unless I'm trying to do something to help somebody. And even my wife said, well, some people you can't help. And I said, well, I have to agree with that, but I'm going to die trying. Let's put it that way. If I can't help you, I'm going to try anyway. And then if you want to talk about me afterwards, I ain't mad. So, I know my job. I know what I have to do, and it's an honor. Hey, Ralph, are you there?
I am here, and I'm
my dear brother, Ralph, I just want to let you know I love you, and you are a tremendous soldier, and we need more warriors like you and Larry. And I tell you, I'm excited. I get excited when I hear things that really, really going on that people really want to hear and people want to really talk about. I think about you all the time too, Ralph. I tell you, some of the times that I be so busy, I say, well, I'm gonna give Ralph a call, and somehow time just run out. See, most of the time, I do more stuff by 8 o'clock than most people do all day, and I'm up early in the morning getting things done, putting my day in order, and I know that we got a real fight here, especially with Whirlpool. They flexing their muscles a little bit. The governor has come in and want to take over the city of Benton Harbor now that they don't have the votes to do what they want to do no more. But we anticipated that. You see, anytime you're dealing with a whirlpool who can no longer actually control this area or bully this area, and everybody on that board is not out for money. Now, I couldn't say that, 2 years ago. I couldn't say that last year. But now I can say that everybody is not out for money. I know you're going to say money talks, money holds a good conversation. And I got to confess, you're telling the truth. You're telling the truth. But we're in a position today like we've never been in before. See, this is the kind of stuff that Martin Luther King died for. All these great soldiers, they died for this, to be in a position where we control our own city. And we know the governor know this too. She's coming. Believe me, she's coming to take over if we let her. But we're going to have to put up a big stank and control her. I was on the radio up in Detroit the other day, and my whole conversation was about her. I thought she's a carpetbagger. She comes in here, and she's taking stuff that don't rightly belong to her, getting her a $3 million home. That's it. I want both of y'all to comment on something about Whirlpool for me, and then we got to move on. I don't care what you got to say. Say something about Whirlpool.
Let me just say right off the bat, this is Larry, let me say right off the bat that, we are proving, you are proving, the people of Benton Harbor are proving, and the nation, that Whirlpool can and must be brought down. And we're doing this by exposing what Whirlpool really is. And by the way, you mentioned this governor. Let's tell the audience we're talking about Granholm. Is that
right,
correct?
Jennifer Granholm, the carpetbagger.
Jennifer Granholm, the carpetbagger governor and very close friend and ally of Whirlpool Corporation, who is the enemy of the people. That's all I have to say.
Oh, absolutely. Ralph, are you there, Ralph?
He probably got disconnected.
But let us never forget economic sanctions. Let's always remember that these things are won by the people, and we can put them out.
Well, that's what we're going to try to do. We're going to try to keep this thing under control as much as we can, and we're going to make sure that people understand exactly where we're at and what we're trying to accomplish here. Anytime that we get a victory, we got to front it in their faces because we don't get many victories around here. So we got to do what needs to be done. Let me say this to each and every one of y'all also, that it's time that we take this thing to a whole different level. Larry, I just want to let you know that, we had really a tremendous week. But something came up that I think that you should know about, or I think that you might want to comment on. Chris Matthews, You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes, I do.
He said that he almost forgot that your president of the United States almost made him forget that he was a black man. Chris Matthews said, and he funded, I don't quite understand what he tried to say. I know that Obama knows the King English quite well. So, Larry, can you help me understand exactly what Chris was talking about? Can you help me with that?
I'm gonna just put it on out there, brother, as best I can. We have to help each other. All I can say is that if being black, you know, means being opposed to waging corporate-sponsored imperialist wars in other lands, if that's what being black means, and if being black means being really and honestly supporting, you know, poor folk like us, the economically disenfranchised folk, and I believe that's what being black really does mean, those two things, okay?
Yeah.
Then I guess I also forgot Obama's black.
Uh-huh.
But on the other hand, if being black is simply a biological thing, you know, colored thing,
and if
being black means being a liar, a hypocrite, and a warmonger, which it doesn't, that's not what being black means. But if it means that, then I suppose Chris Matthews might just want to call him black. But
uh-huh.
I think Obama, you know, simply stated, your president, Barack Obama, simply stated, is what I term a mental mulatto. Mental mulatto who actually hates poor people and talks a good line. He talks a real good line, like you say, the King's English. And he loves the rich, hates the poor, and in many respects, I think he hates that part of him that is biologically black. So Chris Matthews said some things that I think go a lot deeper than he ever knew. And what do they call it? A Freudian slip. Why, that was one heck of a Freudian slip.
That was something that I think that everybody around the world should be saying something about. I believe that regardless whether he meant it to be something good or bad, it was something I think that never should have came out of his mouth. That's what I think. Whether you for Obama or against him, I think as him being the president of the United States, and you don't have no more respect for him than that, I think it's shameful myself. I think the way I look at it, I listened to that speech that night. I took my hat off to him because what he did was incredible, but that's what they all do. When you know the King English, you can do stuff like that. I mean, you could take this baby to a whole different level if you know the King English the way it should be spoken. And that's what he was doing. He was right on the money. And when he said something, he looked directly at them. See, when you talk to people, you have to look at them. You can't turn your head away. And that gave him that force behind. That was a tremendous speech. I tell you, I that's something. Hey, Ralph, is you there? Ralph.
Beginning of your opening.
Ralph, you're coming in and out on us, bro.
Yeah, you're fading in and out on me, Big Ralph. You're fading in and out on me. But can you hear me now?
How am I doing now?
You're perfect. Go right ahead.
At the beginning of the program, when you mentioned that the letter you gave to the criminal division of the prosecutorial division of your town, you could have given that letter and it applied to every inner city in this country, and Texas to New York to L.A. to Maine. This is the situation when dealing with poor and black people. So that letter, you know, could have been spread far and wide.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
It's, you know, when we go to Chris Matthews, I have to smile.
Uh-huh.
Because one of the things that he said was, He does think in black and white. Well, what's news about that? Because
right.
B. Du Bois said it, you know, like a long time ago, the question is the 20th, and now we know the 21st century is color.
Mm-hmm.
So now he merely spoke his mind. He says, I think of him as a black man, but he was spinning a tale, a story, and I still call him a snake oil salesman. Now, you can say he's a good snake oil salesman, but he's still selling snake oil that's going to kill us. Obama is doing his job so well, I sometimes think he's Bush. So, you know, I don't forget he's black. I don't forget that he's a liar. I almost forget that he isn't Bush. So I'm saying, yes, this is who he is. He does his job so well. What is his job? To lie to us, to make us believe it. And the sad thing is, many of us are believing this.
Oh, absolutely. If nothing else, after he got through speaking that night, you know, the TV stations was raving, you know, patting him all on his back and everything you could think of, you know. And Matthew, he's also said, he said Matthew was applauding Obama for raising above his blackness. Now, what do that mean?
That means he sold us out.
Well, I know what it means, but I didn't want you to say it like that.
Let us remember what Obama said before he became president.
Uh-huh.
Always remember this. When he went before the Black Caucus to get support to run for president, they said, well, why should we support you? And you never spoke up on the civil rights issues. And his answer was this, quote me, I didn't want to be tainted by that movement. Now, if you don't understand that Fannie Lou Hamer merely wanted to vote in 1965, and the interesting thing that Fannie Lou Hamer said at the time, we black people are ready for freedom, but our black loyalist Democrats are not.
Wow.
That's all you have to remember. He didn't want to be tainted, and Fannie Lou Hamer said, our black loyalist Democrats are not ready for our freedom. Well, what has changed today? And here we have the head black loyalist Democrat, Obama the president. He's not ready for any freedom of black people anywhere on the planet. Not here, not there, not anywhere. And all
nowhere.
We had to do was look around, you know, like the lie of Haiti and how they're going to do good things for Haiti is falling apart very quickly. And when we talk about Haiti, well, let's just step back. And there's no water. Let's step back to New Orleans. No water. Oh, we can't give them water in the Terror Dome because it would cause riots. Oh, we can't give them food or water in Haiti because it would cause riots.
Hey, Ralph, hold that thought on Haiti right fast, because I want to ask Larry to comment on that. Chris Matthews said that he was applauding Obama for raising above his blackness. Hold that thought. We'll get back to Haiti in a minute.
My response to that is that I think that that's one of the, in one sense, such a statement indicates an enormous amount of racist arrogance, okay? That's in one sense. In another sense, I would have to agree with what Ralph said, that in a way, of course, Obama, as far as white racists are concerned, has risen above his blackness because they define blackness as a negative. You understand?
Right. Mm.
We define blackness as a positive. There's a song that Roberta Flack used to sing called, yeah, I'm old, Roberta Flack used to sing it, her and Donny Hathaway, called Be Real Black for Me.
Uh-huh.
Be Real Black for Me. Now, that's a very good thing, all right? So for anyone to say that he rose above his blackness, what he's really saying is he rose above his own humanity. And what is that leaving? And, that's pretty sad.
That is. And just to think about he would say something on that level.
Yeah.
I mean, that, to me, that's what's shocking to me. I mean, not that, you know, I thought for that hour that Obama was not a black man. He raised above his blackness. I mean, what are you saying? All black people are wild heathens that speaks with a forked tongue and can't use the King English language like we can, we white folks can. What is he saying?
Well, Chris Matthews spoke his mind.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to look beyond his mind. This is what he's thinking.
Right. And not only him, but others.
That's what I was going to say. This is what, I mean, he verbalized what not only others are thinking, lots of people are thinking.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But guess what? Obama's thinking that too. Obama knows exactly what to say to manipulate and how to do it. Okay, but pushing that aside, understand that is part of that manipulation game. It's like Joe Biden, Vice President, your Vice President, Joe Biden, when he said that, when he said before then candidate Obama, he said, oh, he was a good, clean-cut guy, he could run, he could do this, this is, in other words, he was saying, this is our nigga.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. This is what he was saying.
Or whoever he was saying, he can't jump, so he got to be one of us.
He got to be one. You sure? You got that right, my brother.
Yeah.
You got that right.
So you can look. You know the word they use. They I'm not gonna say it openly, but he can't jump. I watched him play basketball.
In more ways than one, he can't jump politically. In more ways than one, he can't jump politically either.
Absolutely.
To poor people and black people, he ain't about to jump.
Yeah. He ain't going to jump and help them, that's for sure.
No, by no means.
Right, you know, like you said, you know, like, there's a whole lot he could be doing, but he's not doing it. But we have to take this thing to another level.
See, my big concern is, he is getting away with this. You know, his popularity among black people is almost as good as it was when he started.
Oh, absolutely.
They're mad at white people because white people are showing their racism. He, my friend, is a white man who serves the white interest. He just has a black skin. And this is how they got him over on us. And
that's right.
When he began to run, I said, well, he's got 95% of the black female vote. And what does that say about us?
That matter of fact, that says a lot about us.
Exactly.
We're just happy to have a man who's who's half black and half white as the president. Here's the thing. They go around advertising he's related to that guy in Massachusetts. That's his cousin, the one that brown guy.
Oh, the one that won the senatorial seat.
Right.
Really?
That's his cousin.
Well, I can tell you
also
this.
Also, he's related to Bush.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Now, he's in, and you know, his ancestors are slaveholders. I hope our audience listens to this. Oh, Barack Obama's ancestors were not slaves. They were slaveholders. And he still serves the interest of slave holders. We need to understand that. And, you know, this man is tugging and pulling at the heartstrings of black America. He's manipulating and tugging and pulling at our heartstrings, okay? And yet he demonstrates the utmost contempt for black America and for poor people across the board, you know. So we need to wake up, really. We need to wake up and take stock. Some of the most, what do they say? Don't judge a book by its cover.
That's
and
right.
When okay? And so when these folks say, oh, this is a nice cover, we love that cover. And meantime, black people saying, I'm going to call, he black. What does that tell you? It tells you, first of all, that in the sense of serving the interest of humanity, he is not black, And it tells you that biologically, I mean, ask yourself how many times you've even heard the word black come out of Obama's lips.
I like the way you said it, Larry. He manipulated and is manipulating the emotions of black people. And one of the things that I look forward to is the day when black people begin to look at this man intellectually.
Ooh, Lord, he'll be in trouble then.
What he said, but what he does.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You see, we want them to, like you said, don't judge him by the cover, judge him by the contents. And,
I
tell you, the when you start digging deep into this young man, you're going to find some things that's going to make you turn black. You see, that's what it's going to do. It's going to make you want to be a real black man. Say, hey, and the black women is going to make them start bobbing that head and pointing that finger. And the first thing going to come out, I told you he wasn't black. I told you he wasn't going to come out and do this. I told you that is what you're going to hear from the public. And because sooner or later, we're going to get smart enough to understand that he's not here to help us.
That's right.
You could tell by the stimulus package that he's not here to help us. The money will circulate the same way it's been circulating for years and years and years. You know, if you're going to help us, you got to start from the bottom up. You can't start at the top.
Right, but he didn't understand bottom up because he comes from the top.
That's right.
He comes
like
from
I told
the
you,
top.
He had a condominium in Hyde Park when he was in college.
Can
so
you imagine that?
You can't afford that. You can't afford one now.
That's right.
It's interesting when you talk about black people and how he's manipulating their emotions or our emotions. When we talk about Martin Luther King, judge not a man by the color of his skin, but the content of his character.
That's
right.
Obama, and we do a reverse. We judge a man by the color of his skin.
Yeah.
We don't want to look at the content of his character. Because when you bring up some of the things he has done, they just, like, turn away. They don't want to hear this. The content of his character. He did not want to identify with the... No, not identify. Did not want to be tainted by our movement to be treated as citizens. That would taint him. And that says it all.
Absolutely. And really, remember Dr. Jeremiah Wright. You know, what Jeremiah Wright was saying was actually 100% on point.
Exactly.
And he distanced himself from Jeremiah Wright, his pastor for over 20 years. That is shameful and disgraceful. People in the community, anytime you separate yourself from your pastor, you have to know there is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for that long a period of time.
I like to go
the
back.
The man who married him. He married Michelle and
right.
Barack
the Trinity
Obama.
Church. And he married them.
I'd like to go back to that because, again, that asks the question, who are we when we see a man act in that manner? To diss the minister who never said anything that Martin Luther King hadn't said 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
He said it. He said it was true. And as I said to people, he walked away from his minister. How long do you think it'll take him to walk away from his promises to you?
And remember this, too. The white media was pushing him away. They was telling him, separate yourself from him and this type of language. They was telling him, if you decide that you if you line up behind him, we white folks is not going to line up behind you, then you be just another normal black man out here trying to seek employment. That's what they was telling him. And they told him, separate yourself from Jeremiah Wright. Separate yourself now, and I want you to disown him.
They said that, my brother. They said that, but they also said, separate yourself from the Gen 6. Does anybody remember the Gen 6? Separate yourself from the civil rights movement that Dr. Martin Luther King is strongly known to be a part of. Separate yourself from Brother Malcolm X, who told the truth, spoke truth to power. Separate yourself. In other words, what were they saying? Do not be black.
That's right.
And that tells me about us. And I get back to this question, what about our makeup that we accept that. And the only thing that I can conclude is most of us people of color do not want to be black.
Mm.
We would like to live the life of Obama, the myth of Obama, the myth that we one day could separate ourselves from our blackness. Now, we can do it to ourselves, but as Chris Matthews says, he can almost forget your black when you're groveling and doing their work.
That's
so
right.
What about, that brings me back to us.
Mm-hmm.
What about us that we find this acceptable?
Right. And you know this, all these black scholars, not one of them hollering about it.
Yeah.
I have not heard nobody, even my, Michael Dyson, he said the week before that anything black, Obama is running from. But he didn't come out and criticize Chris Matthews on this issue. I thought this was, we had black folks, we should be picking him. We should be doing something, throwing spitballs or something at these folks. Because see, now it appears that everything they say is acceptable to us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, I almost forgot that Obama was a black man. Isn't that terrible, being black?
I love that, when he did that. And I'm saying he spoke his mind.
Right. Well, he spoke with all everybody else's thinking.
And so let us go back to, what about us that we, this goes right over our heads. And
mm-hmm.
I find all of these black cultural nationalists raving. How could he say, well, he just told the truth. Didn't you read W.E.B. Du Bois? Don't you understand what that means? Don't you understand the history of slavery? Don't you understand the history of the European in the Americas? What did they do? They divided the society according to color.
That's right.
If you were almost white, you were right.
Uh-huh.
If you were brown, stick around. If you're black, get back. Who
all the way back.
Who is
all
that?
The way.
And so, and
as in the back
they,
of the bus.
This is why they hate Fidel Castro. Because
mm-hmm.
Fidel Castro broke that mold. He says, no, it's not about color. It's about your policies.
Uh-huh.
This is our policy. And across the Americas, Central America and South America, we see in Venezuela this curly-haired man who is the president of the country is moving the country to the left. They hate that, because in his country, no Indian or black-looking man sat at the top. They were all, and the society is divided that way. And you can go across all the Central and South America, all of those colonies, and you will see those ex-colonies that the society is divided according to color. You see in Argentina, in Nicaragua, in Bolivia, throughout. No, they do not want brown or black people. And the brown or black people are pushed to the bottom. They support the light skin.
Mm-hmm.
The people are closest to white. This is how the imperialists have done it. And when Fidel came in and says, no, we're not going to do it that way anymore, boom, he becomes the enemy. Now, what about us that we accept them making a man who has educated, one of the most educated countries in the world, who exports hospitals, who exports schools, and who was first on the ground with a hospital in Haiti? How can we allow them to say this is a bad man? You know what?
Well,
about
because
us?
That goes that speaks directly to how can we allow them to say that black is bad?
Yes,
that's
right.
That's all Chris Matthews was saying.
Right.
That black is nasty, and we allow, and in that respect, as far as this society is concerned, of course, nothing has changed. Everything's the same as it used to be, except now they got a mental mulatto to do their bidding.
And what about us that we allow a man to be president who says black is bad and does everything, as you stated before, to prove he's not black?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I always bring it back to, what about us that this man is getting over on us like that? Emotionally, personally, comes up and makes a statement and everybody goes crazy. Well, Chris Matthews just told the truth.
But you know, we didn't go crazy enough about it.
No.
See, the thing that gets me, are you telling me it's such a horrible, terrible thing being a black person?
That's what he was saying.
I know that's exactly what he was saying. But I can't sit here and think about you, Chris Matthews, saying that black is so terrible. Now, what I have to do now, I have to go back and tell my children that I have deceived you all these years by saying that black is right. It's good to be black. Stand up for blackness. Now, you got to go back and tell your children the same identical thing. Now, I will never, ever sit down here and allow them to talk to me that way, speak to me on that level, and allow them to get away with it. Because the truth of the matter is that we have to take a stand. If black is so terrible, is this the way that this country feel about us? We need to do something about it.
Well, one of the things I notice is that Chris Matthews gets all of this conversation, and just 2 weeks ago, we have the man on the 700 Club. What's his name?
What's his name? Robinson, Pat Robinson.
Pat Robinson. That the Haitians are being punished because for winning their freedom, they made a pact with the devil. So now I look, the first thing that strikes me is, well, it's a Catholic country. Let me wait till the Pope says something about that.
You got to remember this, too. Pat Robinson figured like that it was no way possible for Haiti to defeat the French.
That's right, but I'm saying...
He said because in order for them to do it, they had to make a deal with the devil.
And it's a very foolish and
uh-huh.
statement, but more interesting to me is the silence of the rest of the religious community. Where are they? Why aren't they outraged? Now, this Chris Matthews makes a statement, well, he's a nobody. You know, like there he is, he speaks his mind, and we're all up in arms. But we're not up in arms over Pat Robertson making that outrageous statement.
Well,
I am not mad. We didn't go to the Pope and say, you're the head of the Catholic, you know, community of the world, and you have nothing to say about your so-called people making a pact with the devil. And I just looked around. All, you know, like I looked at the Pentecostals and the Episcopalians, and I listened, and I heard silence.
Man, remember this. Always remember this. Any time that something is said about a religious group, the religious group used to stand up for people. Now what they have done, they have taken a back seat. If you go to a minister and ask him to go over there. Let's say I was a member of his church, and somehow my son got in trouble. And I asked him to go over to that courthouse with me to support that issue. Mm-hmm. He would have 10 reasons why he can't go over there, 10 excuses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a cold last month, and he's scared it might come back on him. You know, they got all kind of reasons why. This is the religious. We don't have a real religion anymore. What we have now, we got people who go to church. You see, that's what we have now. We don't have people standing up for what they believe in. If you're a Christian, you stand up for Jesus. You understand? That's true. And if you believe in Buddhism, you stand up for Buddha. But we don't have people standing up for what they believe no more. It's that media got everybody so afraid to move that they won't even move forward. And Chris and Pat, they're the same people. They just got different names. That's all.
And as I say, it's interesting about Christians and their fear to move against their oppressors. And I always say, well, one of the first things we learn is the 23rd Psalm. I will fear no evil, for thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Although I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Well, where is your strength?
Wow.
My rod and thy staff shall protect me.
You know what you're saying, Ralph?
I'm looking at the wrong Christians.
Have you noticed that all that money being sent over there, folks, the food is not getting to the people?
Oh, boy.
Right.
Have you noticed that?
I am so sick and saddened by that. And who is the man who promoted Bush and Clinton. And as I said on your program before, I want some young journalist to say, let me ferret out how much money the Clinton and Bush are making here.
Mm. But you know what? The way they're saying, the amount of money that's reaching the Haitians is 10 cents on a dollar.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I'm so sad. You know, not that they're stealing, because they're going to steal all the time, but they steal at this moment when people are in dire need. They're stealing everything now.
Well, that's the whole plan. It looked like they're trying to help the people over there, but they're not. These people are starving.
That's right, and that's the whole plan, as you just said, my brother. And let's ask ourselves, on whose watch is this being done? Mr. President Barack Obama. Whose watch?
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, brother. You're absolutely
correct.
When are we going to get angry about this? All of us who say, gee, it's a terrible thing that happened in Haiti, but it seems that no truth opens our eyes. How long has this man been doing this? And no truth opens our eyes. People are looking at Obama like he must be God himself, because there is no critical look. Even people criticize Jesus. There's no criticism of Obama on our part.
And I tell you what, we bet not. You can't go around talking, not in the black neighborhood, talking about Obama.
Exactly. So
you go in the black neighborhood talking about Obama, you got a fight on your hand. And then they're going to go tell the white man on you.
Who and what have we become?
Mm.
And this is my question. I'm almost tired of Obama. I'm just looking at how we react to this, and as Larry said, how he is able to manipulate our emotions to the degree that we are almost insane, because one of the definitions of insanity is an inability to perceive reality.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
How long are we going to go as a people unable to perceive reality no matter what? But I'm hopeful, you see, because we have 4 million foreclosures. You know about that out in Detroit. Well, it's going to 10 million, and there's going to go to hunger.
That's right.
People who are on rung 3 who haven't been foreclosed on are now going to be closer to a foreclosure, another 10 million.
But Obama said, I looked at the speech too because I had to write about it and comment on it. All right? And one of the things Obama said was, but things are getting better. What planet does this man live on?
Hey, this capitalist system is getting ready to collapse.
Yes.
I'm telling you, here's the thing, remember, the capitalist system is built on people working and buying. You see what I'm saying? If nobody's working, who's buying? You can't have a capitalist system if nobody buying, nobody working.
Right.
So the capitalist system is on its way out. It's dying. So now, what are we going to do now? Socialism? What is the next step for us? What do we do from here? We have to understand that if nobody's working, that means nobody buying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not here in the United States. This is going to be a global thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a global thing. So what Obama's doing now, it affected not only people here, but across the waters. We talking about the rest of the world. So now we have to take this thing to a whole different level and start preparing ourselves, because the capitalist system is about to collapse. We the only one don't know that.
That's right.
Don't know it and don't seem to care.
Mm-mm.
You know, we always talk about that.
Why, brother? Because I know I'm being facetious here, but I want our audience to hear and think about it. Wake up, people. Wake up. You know, stop this nonsense about, he did it. Stop that foolishness. Wake up. Look at the reality of what is actually happening. As Reverend Brother Pinckney said, you know, the bottom line is that the capitalist system is actually in the process of falling even as we speak. What do they do? They reach out and they touch, as the FBI would say. They reach out and they touch and they pull in this mental mulatto, semi-black-looking hypocrite to do exactly what he's doing. Now, I cannot fault people, okay, who, and I'm talking about even white or brown or yellow people whose eyes are opening. I'm looking at black people and I'm saying we must make a choice. We must not be insane, as you pointed out, Ralph. We must not be insane, which means we must deal with reality. And
that's beautiful. That's what we have to start spreading that word, though.
Yes.
Because the more people know, the better they're able to deal with reality.
And even if they disagree with us, one day has to come when they say, brother, you were right.
Mm-hmm.
And where do we go from there? Because I was looking at one of the poorest nations in the world, Bangladesh.
Yes.
How they're going to soon be underwater, and there's a movement of people. Well, one of the things that's a quiet secret is the people of Bangladesh are moving politically.
Mm-hmm.
They are getting it together politically, organizing community by community, the same way it was done in Venezuela.
Mm.
To take control of their country. And I look and I kind of laugh when I look at the news, and you have to smile, and I'm saying, well, Mohammed Karzai, the European Union is putting their, you know, like a trust in him, and they're going to send the money. And I'm saying, well, hell, he's just like us. He stole the election. He stole the money. His brother is in charge of the drug trade. And now they think they can buy. And this is the most interesting thing. And this
Ralph,
is
tell them who Mohammed Karzai. You're talking about the president of Afghanistan.
That's right.
Go ahead.
I am sorry. Afghanistan. So this man stole the election. Everybody is aware. He most corrupt. One of the, you know, it's hard to say when you say most corrupt. There's so many corrupt
people. Right.
Everybody that the United States puts their approval on is
corrupt.
So, but this is an interesting thing. They put their approval on this man who is proven to be. Hello? Hello?
Ralph?
Ralph, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Who has proven to be totally corrupt. And what do they. We're going to buy the militants who want their country. Hello?
We're here.
Okay. And they really think that everybody is for sale.
That's the mentality of this world. Everybody can be bought and sold.
Yeah, you see, but they're going to get their comeuppance because these Afghani Muslims will take your money. But as a famous lawyer I knew once said, I don't care whether he can be bought, but I care how long he can stay bought. So, you know, how long do you think that these Afghanis, these warriors who give up their lives daily fighting this monster, will stay bought? They will take their weapons, they will take their guns, they will take their money, and tomorrow they will be pointing their weapons, guns, and using their money to defeat America. This is how I know America is going to be defeated big time in Afghanistan, and as quiet as it's kept, people do not understand that their ability to stay in Afghanistan is based on their ability to pay off the Afghani fighters to allow them to move their supplies around. They take their trucks whenever they damn well please.
Oh, absolutely.
So now they're paying. So now they put a soldier, a general over there and says, well, I see the light at the end of the tunnel, and we're going to win, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. Well, I lived through the Vietnam era. And that light at the end of the tunnel never came. But it was a locomotive coming the other way. And I'm sad and sorry for the Afghani people and our young brothers who do not understand, who watch this ignorant box, and they think war is glorious, and they're going to be saluted and loved by their country for fighting it, and they're just going to come home in body bags, in pieces, and they will be worse off when they come back than they were when they left, because we know the figures. 67% of blacks and Latinos who go into the service are unable to access the benefits they talk about.
Oh, absolutely.
And under whose watch? Again, I say.
Again.
You know, I'm going to get sick and tired of me saying this, but I'm going to say it again. Under whose watch?
Get off my president. Obama.
Your president. All right. It's under Obama's presidency that these things are being done. Here's what. We have an obligation. You know, if we love ourselves, even respect ourselves, then we have an obligation. You know?
Oh, absolutely, Larry. We have an obligation not only to ourselves, but to our brothers and sisters, you know, to stand up for what's right. And when you speak of the war over there, you have to consider one thing. If they really, 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 United States is a very, very powerful country, but they'll never, ever, ever win another guerrilla warfare.
Nope.
I don't care how hard they try. I don't care what country it is. It could be the smallest country that you could think of. They will never, ever win one. Because one thing for sure, they don't have the courage. You know, I'm saying the folks, the troops that they sent over there, they're not mentally, morally prepared to deal with wars on this level. These folks are willing to die. They're willing to die for a price. They're willing to die for their country. People over there, they're just calling themselves defending the country and hope they don't have to fire their rifles.
Well, the interesting thing about those people who are great soldiers is Mao Zedong said, the greatest soldier is a soldier who is politically aware of what he's doing.
Right.
Our American soldiers who go there are totally unaware of what they're doing. They drank the Kool-Aid. They believe they're going there to help people. And a young man I met in an airport, and he said to me, he was on his way home for the first time. He says, well, the first thing I'm going to do is kiss the baby I haven't seen. He says, go home and talk to my wife, and the next day I'm going back to the school that I graduated from and joined the service the moment I graduated. He says, don't go. Those people do not want us. And he says he didn't know it until he hit the ground in the green zone in Iraq in an Apache helicopter in full combat gear, got out, and before they got on the ground, they came under fire not far from the American embassy. And he says, and they were under fire for 10 minutes. And he says that's when he began to have doubts. Who's doing the shooting?
Absolutely.
The next day, he's on a convoy, 15-vehicle convoy, and boom, he's up. And he's laying on the ground, and he turns over, and he says, at least I'm alive. And he turns over, and his leg stays there. And he says, I believed it when they said, we're going to help those people, and they want us. And he says, now I know better. And he says, and all I lost was a knee.
And he lost was a knee.
Yes, and he says, I got the lesson with a knee.
He says,
three of my buddies were laying there. They didn't wake up. They never learned this. And many of the others over there didn't learn this. So he says, I got off light by in the lie, but I'm going back to my high school and tell all of my buddies, do not go. So this is what I'm hoping will happen. This is the effect I'm hoping that we will have on our people when we say, do not drink the Kool-Aid. The man is doing bad things to us, bad things to our children. Intentionally, the man does not want to be a part of us. And I'm hoping that some people will say, you know, these guys, you know, they must have a little bit of sense. But I noticed our so-called intellectuals, I'm trying to figure them out. And the only thing I can figure out is, and you gentlemen will help me out on that, I think they want to be Obama. I think that they have swallowed the Kool-Aid, that the race question is gone, and they're gone. And they want to be accepted by the white society.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my fear, that they will do anything to get that acceptance because Obama.
And that's right, brother. That's right. And as I,
what's happening in our minds, in our hearts and minds, not for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So what is happening that we have all these intellectuals and still to this day, so, and I'm going to have to use Elijah Muhammad's words, so-called intellectuals.
Uh-huh,
because
right,
there's no
right.
intellect there at all. There are
no, and the so-called intelligentsia, okay, you know, as I wrote in my column at Black Commentator, okay, this week, I said, and I'll repeat, that the so-called intelligentsia, the black so-called intelligentsia, are proving, okay, by their silence, they are proving that they never really and truly wanted to change this hypocritical, racist, repressive system. No, they didn't want to really change it. They wanted to be the system.
They wanted
that's why you have people like Eric Holder, who wants to see Mumia Abdul-Jamal executed. That's why you have people like Seth Williams, biologically black in Philadelphia, who wants to see Mumia executed. That's why you have Barack Obama, who has done the same thing and is doing the same thing to the people of Haiti that we had done to us in New Orleans and elsewhere. These are not coincidences. This is a pattern.
I tell y'all, that is tremendous. I tell you, I don't see how we allow folks to get away with it. We got to go around here and we got to start shouting it. And what I feel worst about is these Haitians over there. They're starving to death. When I think about all the wars that we're involved with, these people are actually, like you said, drinking the Kool-Aid. So what we want to do, we want to make sure everybody understands exactly where we're coming from. Every single week, we're going to have something for you. We want to make sure everybody understands that we're not Obama fans. And whatever Chris Matthews said in reference to he almost made me forget that he was a black man, we're not going to allow them to forget that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Not because of Obama himself, because of each and every one of us and because of our children and our children's children. And we're going to continue to stand up for what is right. I tell you what, we got 2 minutes left, and I want to give each one of y'all a minute to go ahead and give it to me.
Well,
all I have to say in 30 seconds is I want to thank our listening audience. We need to fight. We need to organize. We need to expose. Our very lives are on the line. We must do this. All power to the people. That's all I have to say.
Ralph?
Is not about Haitians. This is not about Bangladeshis. This is about us, because we're going to be the next people who are thirsty and hungry, because right here in New York City, Rockland County, the water supply has been privatized. They have jerked the price up, and they're going to be soon giving people drinking water that comes right below a atomic energy plant. And you know what that means. Privatized water at a high price. Not over there, but right here. So we have to think, what are we going to do when our water supply is out and when our food supply is out? This is our next thought. Thank you.
Absolutely. And I just want to remind everybody that the capitalist system is dying, is on its way out. And on that note, I want to say to my grandson, Blake Williams, my grandson, not only is he brilliant, but he's also a soldier.
All right.
I love you very much, and I want you to continue standing up for what's right. Please don't let them brainwash you. I know you're not around me now as much as you was, but it's very, very important, Blake Williams. I'm saying this to my grandson because I know what you can do, and I know that you are a hero, and I know that you will stand up for what's right. And I know that you will go beyond the call of duty. And this is to every single person out there. Please don't let the media brainwash you. It's important that you understand that these corporations, they're on their way out too, because they believe in the capitalist system. So we have to take a stand. We have to take a stand for the Haiti people, all the people that's in this country that's being oppressed, that's in this world that's being oppressed. We have to take a stand. We have to show them we're capable of doing so many things. And I tell you, Ralph, once again, I want to say, send a shout-out to Lynn Stewart and let her know that we love her, we love her, we love her. For all her hard work, she stood up when it wasn't even feasible for people to stand up. She stood up. And I think that on that note, I want everybody to know Lynn Stewart, a true hero, and the wife of Ralph Pointner. And Ralph, I really, really thank you. I thank you so much for being on our show. I tell you, you hit the spot for us, because it's no longer the Pinckney and Pinckney show. Now it's the three P's. Okay? That's what it is. And okay, you know how much I love my brother Larry. I love him to death. But Ralph, I love you too. It's three of us, not just two of us anymore.
I like that. Pick
it's three
too.
Of us. And we all in one. I really didn't feel good today, but Larry called and gave me a shout and got my blood stirring. And now I'm happy, you see. But we only got about 4 seconds, so I almost have to say goodnight, but I want y'all to know how much I love you. And I tell you, I will see y'all next week. And if y'all want to come up with some topic that comes up, we will be talking about it. And we are no longer on the air.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Love you, brother.
All right, Dad.
Get some rest.
Take care, Ralph.
Okay, good.
Larry, keep your nose clean.
I'll try. You know that's hard.
Yeah, I know. Talk to y'all later.
All right, Ralph, give me a call.
With him.
All right.